happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
And lots of news, and there were LGBTQ candidates across the country who advanced in Tuesday's primaries. We're going to talk about those races and more with former Houston Mayor Anise Parker, President and CEO of The Victory Fund, dedicated to electing more out LGBTQ officials nationwide.
And we are also forced to revisit this week the evil governor of Florida who is supercharging his war on transgender people, including right here in New York City this weekend.
Well, Ohio Republicans are trying to outdo him. They passed a bill mandating genital inspections for child athletes if anyone wants to know.
Anyone. A little bright light, homeless LGBTQ youth are getting a break from New York State.
And we mourn the passings of activist Elizabeth Meixel, one of ACT UP's beloved Church Ladies for Choice, and Judy Doyle, co-founder of Long Beach, California's Pride.
And a lovely ceremony in Los Angeles where the Dodgers posthumously honored their gay star, Glenn Burke, finally.
And the NFL finally has its first transgender cheerleader.
Who just came out. I'm waiting for the reaction. All that plus Pride news from around the globe. But we start with our very special guest, former mayor of Houston, Texas, Anise Parker. For the last 4.5 years, the president and CEO of the Victory Fund in Washington, D.C., fully, solely devoted to electing LGBTQ people to office around the country. Welcome, Mayor Parker.
Thank you. Glad to be with you once again.
We're thrilled to have you again. We want to check in with you periodically on what's going on. So we hear nothing but bleak news on the networks and the news media about how the right wing is going to take over the Congress, take over the presidency in a couple of years. Democracy is dead. We are going the way of Viktor Orban in Hungary and Putin in Russia. But you've just won some primaries with candidates. What's your view of the electoral landscape at the moment?
That you have to not become fixated on what's happening in Washington and the federal level, and really look to the local level. Democracy is alive and well in the cities and counties and small communities all across America. You know, the 2018 election, the first midterm after Trump was elected, you saw more women, more candidates of color, more LGBT candidates. By an order of magnitude, there was a seismic shift in the demographics of people running for office across America. Now, a lot of them were first-time candidates, and while it's not brain surgery, it's not always easy to learn how to be a candidate either. And a lot of them lost, but many of them stayed engaged in the process. There's those who didn't get elected the first time are back, and they are horrified at what happens in D.C. and the gridlock and the partisanship, and just want to work to get things done in their communities. Because Victory is the only national organization that works at every level of the ballot and all across the country. And our bread and butter races are the state house races. I have the privilege of really seeing American democracy where it still works. That is not to say that what is happening in Washington isn't something that should concern all of us. And yes, there is a ascendant right wing here, and it's not the Republican Party of my parents and grandparents. It is the a new party built in the image of Donald Trump. And even the you mentioned DeSantis. I live in Houston, so I have my own problems with Greg Abbott in Texas. In a race for the bottom, in a race to make life even more difficult for members of our community and many other communities as well.
Well, certainly we would love to be making strides more locally and state by state. But the right wing has been extremely clever in the last, I would say, 20, 30 years about being relentlessly focused on those state houses and other races and shutting us out and screwing around with election laws and redistricting and everything else. So I don't want to ask, is there any hope? Obviously there is, but do you see real energy at that level from progressives to take back some of the power?
I absolutely see real energy around local races, but it's not, I have to say, it's not energy, as Democrats or around, party affiliation. It is energy around individual candidates, inspirational candidates, candidates who can connect to people and bring them, out of their houses to get involved in the process and offer them hope. And, the right candidate with the right message and a good campaign, and that is, it still has to be a part of it. It takes hard work. But that person can win anywhere. The problem seems to be that a lot of folks, yes, they get caught up in watching Washington and get caught up in the echo chamber of, oh my God, there's nothing we can do, and don't realize how much power is really in their hands. Yes, the right has been marching in this direction for a long time. They've been playing the long game. That doesn't mean that we can't, if we show up and vote, can't take our country back.
And, it certainly makes a lot of difference to have out LGBTQ people in the state legislatures and city councils and all that. And for a while, we beat back a lot of these anti-LGBTQ bills. But in the last year, year and a half, 2 years, it's been relentless. And they just look their LGBTQ colleagues in the eye and they vote against our rights. So what changed?
Well, demagogues always have to have a target. There has to be something to attack. For a long time, it was immigrants have been in the crosshairs. Different faith communities, Muslims, for example, have been in the crosshairs. It's our turn, and probably crosshairs is a term that unfortunately is apt. It's our turn. And because they have to have an enemy in order to sustain that, the anger that fuels their party activism.
And their fundraising.
And their fundraising. But the other thing that has happened is that we've made substantial gains as a community in the last decade. We have become more and more visible. We have had more success at the ballot box. We've had more success in the marketplace. And that has raised us as a better target for those on the right. The fact that, in particular, trans kids, but the trans community in general, the fact that they have been targeted much more than those of us who are gay and lesbian or bisexual, I think is telling. No one in America can legitimately say they don't know somebody who is gay or lesbian, and probably in your own family. But there's still a lot of folks who don't personally really understand trans issues, don't have someone in their personal orbit that is trans, who can explain these things or expose them to these things. And it's a whole lot easier to demonize and attack something that you don't know. And then, as a subset of that, to have the targeting trans kids, which is a very, very small population of very fragile young people who need our help and support. And so it is, we have to stand up and do things, but this is a, you know, this is not spontaneous. This is a calculated effort.
And they're playing on parents' fears because more and more kids are coming out as trans and non-binary and things like that. And that's what they are capitalizing on.
Well, interesting, you know, playing on parents' fears and talking about, you know, so much of what they've been doing at the school board level, and Victory works with a lot of school board candidates, has been creating, you know, straw men, like the critical race theory, and attacking books that are even neutral on, you know, stories about LGBT lives, and then moving to trans athletes. They always focus on trans girls playing sports, not thinking about the other side of that, which is trans men being forced to play on girls' teams and the imbalance there. It's a big blind spot. But they also, they talk about even the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. This is about parents' rights. And then in Texas, we have Governor Abbott going doing a 180 on parents' rights if those parents happen to have trans kids, and saying that medically appropriate gender-affirming care is child abuse. We're going to investigate and we're going to take your kids away from you. That has lit a match for a lot of families in their concerns about kids. You know, but I will say, I mean, we've been watching this phenomenon unfold for years, and we keep thinking, well, it can't get worse. They can't get worse. How much more can they do? And what's going to be the bridge too far? And there seems to always be another one. But again, I will repeat, I've, you know, being out there in the hustings, and I can see at that grassroots level, you know, people are taking back their communities. They're standing up. They're doing things, and it is absolutely possible. But you can't do it sitting at home on your couch. You have to go to the ballot box, which is why the right is spending so much time and energy on trying to limit people's access to the ballot.
And the country is so polarized, and you've said this in your interviews, that the primaries are where it's at. The primaries seem to determine who's going to be sitting because the districts are so, you know, gerrymandered across the country. So what should we talk about that now, Anne? You think
sure. And you know, and primary and gerrymandered from the left and the right.
Except New York tied its hands behind its back and went nonpartisan.
Nice try in New York.
I'm in favor of nonpartisan redistricting, but everybody
I'm in favor of nonpartisan redistricting, but New York, they just made a mess.
Well, was ever thus in New York.
Sorry.
Always been a mess. But I just want to emphasize one thing you said. The right wing is winning first because they're lying, because they're suppressing the vote. They're winning on issues that they have very minority support on, because their people are getting out there and they are just depressing everyone else. If we came out in sufficient numbers, none of this would be an issue because we have the majority opinion on all of this.
And you're talking about coming out to vote, not just being out of the closet.
No, I'm talking about voting. But yes, let's run down these races, because you have about 300 endorsed candidates this year.
And, you know, we're still going. We focus on, we sort of parse it out by primary cycle. So there's still candidates to go, and the primaries are almost over, but there's still a few left. But then we have to win in November. A lot of the partisan races are won in the primary, but there's still places where we have competitive candidates.
Well, let's talk about yesterday. We had primaries in Iowa. Liz Bennett to the state Senate.
A tough Democratic primary in Iowa, but she, again, it's a fairly safe blue seat. Liz Bennett should be the next state senator in Iowa.
And the first openly LGBTQ woman to serve in the Senate.
Yes.
And the first trans person likely to serve in the state house in Montana, Zoe Zephyr.
Zoe's an exciting candidate. Zoe has been longtime employee of the university there. She is well known in the community and put a heck of a campaign together. This is the kind of person that changes hearts and minds just by running. And then the power of Zoe being in the legislature. Montana does interesting things, and Zoe will have an opportunity to get some things done while she's there.
A good lesson that we should not stereotype states and think that because it's Montana, it's all
Montana
right.
Montana has 6 out LGBTQ elected officials, and there are just 8 out trans state legislators in the entire country. Yeah. All right, big races for Congress. Long Beach Mayor Robert Garcia, he's running for Congress now.
Made it through the primary. They have jungle primaries in California, so you know the top 2 finishers, wherever they finish, end up in November challenging each other. But
even if they get 50%,
I think he didn't quite get 50%, so. It can be from the same party.
He's so,
but he is the overwhelming favorite. He's did a stellar job as mayor, very popular, and would be the first LGBT immigrant elected to Congress when he's sworn in next year. Very excited about Robert, not just the job he did as mayor, but his potential.
And a very interesting race in California. Palm Springs was thrown into the district of a right-wing Republican, redistricted. This guy, Ken Calvert, very anti-gay. So out Will Rollins. We have a picture of him there on the right with his partner, Paolo, is running in this district, which is a toss-up district.
Yeah, and Will is an able and effective candidate. And any of the candidates that you're putting up here, they're victory endorsed. If you go to our website, victoryfund.org, you'll be able to see those candidates and find out how to get in touch with them, find out a little more about the race.
Okay. That's going to be a tough one. So
it'll be a tough one, but Palm Springs is an interesting one because there's so many people who have weekend homes there that aren't permanent residents, but the people who live there and vote there are very supportive of LGBT candidates. And they're organized, and I think they'll be strong, come out strongly for Will.
All right. So in Oregon, we've been following the progress of Tina Kotek, who looks like she may be in shape to win governor of Oregon. What are you thinking about that race?
So Tina is the longtime speaker of the House there. So has excellent political skills, you know, knows how to do coalition building, just mowed down the rest of the Democratic primary. The challenge is that it's going to be a 3-way race with a Republican and an independent, so that's hard to predict. But what's so interesting about Oregon is that she would be following in the footsteps, or I would say following in the pumps of Governor Brown, Kate Brown, who was one of the 2 out LGBT governors. So it's in a way, it's a legacy seat. Tina has well known in the state for her work in the legislature, has had to reintroduce herself to the state as a candidate for governor and has her own ideas and issues that she wants to work on. But the fact that we've reached the point in our movement where you have one, you know, someone trying to succeed an out LGBT governor is pretty astounding to me.
Now, we think of Massachusetts as a very liberal.
Before we go to Massachusetts, can I just ask about Jamie McLeod Skinner in Oregon, who's running for Congress?
Jamie McLeod Skinner has run previously unsuccessfully, but has always run strong campaigns and has come close. This time she took out a conservative Democrat as an incumbent. And while I won't be clear sailing, has an excellent opportunity to be the first out LGBT person to come to Congress from Oregon as well. It's, you know, our victory is nonpartisan. There's not very many Republicans that we can get behind, but Jamie is just put together a great race. And this was a situation where redistricting significantly shifted a Democratic base, a Democratic seat, and gave a fresh start to Jamie to move in there and bump off the incumbent.
Okay. So Massachusetts, we think of as a very liberal state, but it has a Republican governor now. But Maura Healey, the Democratic Attorney General, is running for governor.
Maura Healey has been a well-regarded, very able and effective attorney general, has been in leadership among the Democratic attorneys general, well-positioned for a governor's race. And yes, they have had a slew of moderate Republican governors in Massachusetts, but Maura has a good chance, having already won statewide office a couple of times, has a great chance to break that cycle and move up. So with Jared Polis running for re-election in Colorado and Tina Kotek in Oregon and Maura Healey in Massachusetts, we sort of have the top of the half of the country covered with these governor's races. And they're big, expensive, important races. But we have great candidates running. These are not long shot candidates. These are front running candidates.
Great. And in Vermont, we've been following Becca Ballant, who moved up in her possibilities when one of her toughest opponents resigned the race and endorsed her last week or the week before. But she's in a primary against, which hasn't happened yet, I guess.
No.
Against another strong candidate, the lieutenant governor, maybe?
So the good news is that Vermont will finally send a woman to Congress. Vermont is the only state that has never sent a woman to Congress. Vermont. We think of Vermont as something, place that's maybe a little bit on the left.
One.
Well, but still, never a woman. And so we know that the next member of Congress will be a woman. And it is, yes, you're right, it is a statewide race. And it was significant. There was a three-way race, three women running, and one of them dropped out and endorsed Becca Ballant and didn't want to be the spoiler, decided that she couldn't get there. And I think that was a courageous thing to do, a tough thing to do, but a huge boost to Becca Ballant's campaign. And that will, with just one member of Congress, that will give Becca extra importance in terms of what happens statewide in future years.
Okay. And then there's Daniel Hernandez in Arizona, who we first became aware of when he was a hero when Gabby Giffords got shot years ago. And I think has been in local office and is now running for Congress in Arizona.
Daniel Hernandez was, I think, the youngest school board member ever elected in the state of Arizona.
There you go.
School board member, was reelected, became a member of the legislature, was reelected, now running for Congress. A perfect example of the political pipeline, starting at a local level at a very young age, and then being successful and moving up. He did save the life of Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, but you know he is running on his accomplishments as a leader and a legislator. He's well in the lead in recent polls, and fully expect to see Daniel Hernandez in D.C., Hopefully he can be effective in D.C. in a way he has been in Arizona. But as we said at the top of this show, it's still a challenge to get things done there. But we have to keep sending good people.
Well, you've got a bunch of good people in Texas. We've already talked about them. We have pictures of three of them. That's from left to right, Yolanda Jones, likely to be reelected to the legislature, and two black gay men, Benton Jones and Christian Manuel Hayes, to be the first black men in the legislature.
So it's Yolanda Jones, and rather
than Yolanda.
Yolanda, and Christian's there in the middle, and then Benton Jones. Houston, Dallas, and Beaumont, Port Arthur. We currently have six members of the State House serving from our community, but they're all women. These three will be the first African-American LGBT legislators. Yolanda actually won a special election in addition to the November election, so she's currently serving, so she has the distinction of being the first black lesbian to serve in the Texas House. So we raised our number of women to seven. Houston and Dallas, they won in traditionally black districts. These are strong blue seats. Shouldn't be any problem in November. They still have to get through. Christian Emmanuel Hayes, Beaumont Port Arthur is more Louisiana than Texas, and it's a few decades behind a lot of the other places in the state. So his success there was important. It was a very, very close two-way race in the runoff, but we look forward to him serving.
And many other races, and people should go to your website, victoryfund.org, to find out who's running. We also just wanted to mention someone from Kentucky, Keturah Herron.
Keturah Herron vaulted onto the national stage with her work after the shooting of Breonna Taylor. She was a community activist who stepped up, demanded accountability and responsibility, pushed for change, made inroads into legislatively changing policies and procedures there and working to try to do police reform, shifted her sights to the legislature. Won an appointment and then is running unopposed. A great story there in won the special election in February, and the first out LGBT person in the Kentucky State House.
And we may also get our first out congressman from Illinois in Eric Sorensen, but the one I'm really rooting for is Jasmine Beach Ferrara in North Carolina, running for Madison Cawthorn's seat. And I understand she's doing very well in the polls at the moment.
She is doing very, very well. It's a little bit of good news, bad news that he got bumped out in the primary because, I mean, it is on paper a Republican seat, and but he was so terrible that she's a great candidate. But the fact that she was running against Madison Cawthorn got a lot of people's attention and got a lot of energy behind her campaign. Then he got wiped out in the primary, and she's had to regroup. But a pastor, longtime, you know, community presence, hardworking candidate, and again, her opponent won't have nearly the national profile and reach that pinhead Madison Cawthorn, but it's still an uphill. It's become more of an uphill challenge now that he's out of the race.
Well, we thank you for being with us. Keep us posted, and we'll keep our viewers posted on all the relevant races.
I kind of think if we kept you longer and maybe offered a cocktail, we'd get more pinhead comments. And I would like that.
I come from the school of politics where you try to be respectful and polite to your honored opponents.
Yeah.
And I served for a long time in a chamber where you did not personally address your colleagues. But let's call a spade a spade. This guy was a disaster for the Republicans. He was an embarrassment to America. And I'm glad hopefully he will be leaving the political stage.
And I hope we can do that with more of those pinheads around the country. Thank you for the work you're doing. Please, audience, go to victoryfund.org to find out about the candidates in your area and around the country that you can support, because this is just crucial work for our survival.
And if I can add, outforamerica.org is our map where we show every currently serving LGBT elected official. That's a great resource. Find out who in your state or in your community is already serving that you can get behind.
Great. Well, thank you, Mayor Parker. We'll bring you back for more updates as these races go on. And thanks for joining us. And we'll move on to other news now.
Thank you. All right.
All right. So let's go to New York politics first with Mayor Adams' reception here.
Well, I covered the reception, the LGBTQ pride reception that he had. There he is last night. And during this reception, first of all, he talked about the impact of the assassination of Harvey Milk on him when he was 18. And then he said, one of your own is mayor of the city of New York fighting on your behalf.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got a call into the press office. Would he care to clarify his sexual orientation?
Well, good luck. But to me, that was just an offhand remark about being
one of your own.
An ally. He's part. He considers himself a.
All right. Okay.
He's an ally.
Right.
That's we can put a little bet on that. But that's my.
Well, as long as we're in New York, I mean, let's talk about
and let's reiterate that reception was boycotted by all the major LGBTQ Democratic political clubs
and elected officials
because we're still angry at him for one of us appointing anti-LGBTQ pastors to positions in his administration, continuing to sweep homeless people off the streets and doing a lot of other things people are not happy about.
Well, we have some better news from Jabari Brisport. There he is. He was at the reception for the Out 100. Ann and I are up to 72 on the list.
He goes up and down, Andy, up and down.
He was the chief sponsor of a bill that says if you were living in New York and you were a New Yorker, this bill is for you, allowing homeless and runaway LGBTQ youth to make their own health decisions, even if they're under the age of 18. It's a tremendous breakthrough. They don't need parental permission. They can get, especially for transgender youth. It's terrific.
And the state legislature passed the Lorena Borjas Transgender and Non-Binary Wellness and Equity Fund, which is going to give more funding to trans nonprofits around the state for care for trans people.
Okay. Let's move on to other places.
I just want to note that this weekend, Florida Governor DeSantis is going to be at a Jewish event at Chelsea Piers.
Well, it's a right-wing Jewish group, a political group.
Also, Elliot Abrams, Mike Pompeo, and
all your favorites.
Yeah.
So there's a 1:30 demonstration there down at the source of Chelsea Piers at 23rd and 24th Street at the river, and Rise and Resist and other groups are going to be out there protesting. Because look, what he did this week, he asked the state board regulating doctors to essentially ban transition-related care for trans minors. And the Florida DOH issued a big report to justify banning Medicaid coverage for trans people of any age who want puberty blockers, hormone therapies, or gender confirmation surgery.
This is expected to affect 9,000 trans people in Florida. DeSantis' excuse for doing this is that there is a potential for harmful long-term effects. Thank you, Dr. DeSantis.
Well, he was confronted by gay high school activist Jack Patoche at a forum over guns, and the governor sicked the security forces on him to get him out of there.
Well, as long as we're in Florida, a couple of other stories. Senator Marco Rubio, he's against gun control of any kind. He's fine with kids being shot up. But he got very angry at the Air Force because they were sponsoring a drag queen story hour at the Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany and called it dangerously sexualizing kids and got the Air Force to cancel it.
Well,
he won't cancel AR-15s, but he will cancel Drag Queen Story Hour.
Most of the news is bad, but in New York, the Port Authority police are no longer going to target men's rooms at the Port Authority for gay public lewdness arrests. This is the result of a federal lawsuit that was brought in 2017 where they falsely arrested a bunch of people. And they're going to post signs that say this restroom may be used by any person regardless of gender identity or expression.
Yeah, settling a lawsuit by two guys. But meanwhile, Pride Month kicked off with a gay guy getting knifed on the subway in the Bronx, really deeply, almost cut his hand off. But the attacker has been caught, so that at least is good news.
And in Fredericksburg, Maryland, a right-wing candidate for the local Board of Education asked the library, you got to remove these 20 LGBTQ books that are on display. They said no. So she checked them all out and took them. And
they're replaceable.
They're replaceable. When she finds out what's on the internet?
Well, at River Valley High School in Marion, Ohio, the graduation speaker was a local businessman named Jim McGuire, who got up and gave a speech about biblical principles and how man-woman marriage is the only thing acceptable. The graduates in the audience were horrified. The school put out a statement disavowing his speech.
Oh, good.
You'd think they might have vetted it before letting him speak, but no.
All right. In New Hampshire, the House voted down a parental rights bill that would have forced teachers and school staff to report LGBTQ kids to their parents. The vote was 171 to 176. It was close. The Senate Republicans had passed it 14 to 10. But in the House, 13 Republicans joined all the Democrats in defeating it. And Governor Sununu had already, he's Republican, but he already said he would veto it.
And back to school news. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a school counselor, Marissa Darling, appeared at a local anti-trans rally and engaged in a vicious, vicious rant against...
Using a lot of bad language that we can't use on this show.
Transgenderism was one of her phrases. She is probably going to lose her license as a school counselor for immoral conduct for giving a speech like that.
North Carolina, the Senate passed a parental rights don't say gay bill that heads to the House. The Democratic Governor Roy Cooper is sure to veto it.
It also allows the schools to out kids to their parents and monitors their library choices. Let's see
In
what else.
Ventura, California, a teacher affirmed a trans student's new name and pronouns. And when a right-wing newsletter picked that up, the school was vandalized with graffiti. Pervs work here. The school board is supporting the teacher, as have parents in the that area.
in Dallas, Texas. Sorry, we're trying to race through this because we had a long chat with Mayor Parker. In Dallas, parents and kids were having a pride event in the daytime at a local bar, in the daytime, not during drinking hours, and the bar was putting on a little drag show for the kids. Well, a bunch of self-described Christo-fascists showed up at the event, started haranguing and really screaming at everybody, the parents, the kids, the performers. They went inside and filmed people and then posted that online, chased people down the street. It's getting very vicious and dangerous out there.
In San Francisco, we told you about the out trans bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church, Megan Rohrer. But she's resigned amidst allegations of racism over the firing of a Latino pastor who was also a finalist for the job as bishop. But Rohrer said that they were resigning because of the constant bullying and harassment of them, after their synod voted to remove that pastor. So it's a big mess, and there's investigations going on.
Sad. A couple of national stories from the Biden administration. First, very good news. The Department of Defense has dropped its appeal of a federal court ruling on people with HIV serving in the military. The court had ruled that people should be allowed to serve with HIV, especially if they were non-detectable and asymptomatic. And the Defense Department was appealing that ruling and trying to get rid of people. And they have changed their mind. They've dropped the appeal and issued, Defense Secretary Austin has issued a memorandum saying it is fine to serve if you are undetectable. You can be deployed overseas. You can be promoted. But we're not accepting people who apply for the military who are HIV positive. We must change that.
You think it can't get any worse. And, this thing may not go anywhere, but a Texas Republican in the legislature now has introduced a bill to ban drag shows in proximity to minors. And again, it sounds absurd, but they do pass things like this. He also, this guy also opposes protecting kids from mass slaughter. Now, you have, again, drag. I mean, we're all in drag in one form or another, so it's just insane.
Well, no one is more benign than people in these drag shows. And in Ohio, the House there has passed a bill that allows anybody to question any student athlete's gender and therefore subject the student to a genital examination.
If the child appears too masculine or too feminine, it goes on and on and on. Well, Louisiana, the Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards, is letting the ban on trans girls and girls sports go into effect. Not going to sign it, not going to veto it, which means it goes into effect. He says it's just plain mean. He said, but they're going to override a veto anyway, so I'm not picking a fight.
Good news from Oklahoma, where there's been a change in the story we told you about with the divorcing lesbian who was having her name erased from her child's birth certificate. The judge has changed her mind, is vacating that order. It still has to go to court over the custody, but the name will not be taken off the birth certificate.
Let's talk about some of the people we lost.
Okay.
Okay. Dear Elizabeth Meitzel, who was with Church Ladies for Choice, 77 years old. She was known as Sister Mary Cunnilingus there. We're going to link to her oral history of ACT UP. It's a wonderful story. Talk a little bit more about Elizabeth.
Well, she was a dream. She was an older straight woman who came into ACT UP through first WHAM, the Women's Health Action Movement. You can watch her oral history on the ACT UP Oral History Project website. She was a secretary. She went to college for a year late in life at SUNY Buffalo, took some feminist courses and got involved in those issues and became an activist. And she was a dream. She was smart. She was so funny, so wry. And she was one of the inventors of the Church Ladies for Choice that would do demonstrations at churches for reproductive freedom. And we'll show you now a picture of her and a little excerpt of the Church Ladies.
And while you do that, I have to escape for a second, and you okay. Talk about our next obituary.
Okay.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Church Ladies for Choice. The Church Ladies wear floral print polyester frocks, sensible shoes, and earrings that pinch. That's what keeps us so angry.
I like seeing her sitting at that table with a sign on a fundraising can that says, "Donate all your money." And while she was not in the one in the nun's habit there, she did often dress in a nun's habit. And I remember her once going to the Today Show and standing on the sidelines as they were broadcasting from outside. I think Al Roker went over to interview her because he said, you know, here's this nice nun. And he sticks a microphone in front of Elizabeth, and she starts giving him this lovely little speech about abortion rights. And he just didn't know what to do with her. She was fantastic and just totally fooled and surprised everyone, but a very important member of ACT UP and a terrific human being. I was so sorry to hear of her death. She is greatly, greatly missed. And then we also lost Judy Doyle of Long Beach, California at 78, who was a co-founder of Long Beach Pride. She got so many death threats that in 1985, now 85, come on, we're talking 16 years after Stonewall, she had to wear a bulletproof vest to march in the Long Beach Pride Parade. She sued the city when they tried to impose a huge insurance requirement on the event. There she is in her very glamorous younger days. And she won that suit, and the city was forbidden to make decisions based on, political content.
She's survived by a son, Brennan, who called her a powerful force of nature with a passion for fighting for others.
And we also lost Paul Gunther, 65, as suicide.
He was a leading New York architectural and cultural preservationist. Most recently, the head of the executive director of the Gracie Mansion Conservancy. But he worked throughout his life to preserve the forgotten monuments in New York and things like that. He used to work for Cultural Affairs Commissioner Henry Geltzahler 100 years ago, and he was the first, who was the first out commissioner in New York. He's survived by his longtime partner, Joel Sanders, and he also helped rescue the New York Historical Society, and I'll make a personal commercial here. I'm going to be there at the New York Historical Society on June 21st. They're going to be a panel about Children of the Rainbow, the first grade culture wars back in the 1990s, with Joyce Hunter, Randy Weingarten, and Danny Drum.
Great. And in D.C., the Mattachine Society there has decided to donate its archives and all the federal documents it has dug up over the years about the Lavender Menace and the federal government's discrimination against gay people to William and Mary College. Jeff Trammell, one of their members, was the former rector of William & Mary and the board chair there, and is on the Mattachine Advisory Board. That is a rich, rich trove of material.
Should we do a couple of pride notes?
Sure.
The Dodgers had their pride night in Los Angeles and finally honored the late out player Glenn Burke, who they drove from town in 1978. And went to work for Oakland with the horribly anti-gay Billy Martin. But even they honored him in 2015. He died of AIDS at 42 in 1995, fondly remembered by many teammates. The general manager of the Dodgers, Al Campanis, offered Burke a $75,000 bribe to marry a woman. And Billie Jean King, more about whom later, is a part owner of the Dodgers and regrets not connecting with him back in the day. The Dodgers wore custom rainbow caps for the first time. And by the way, the Dodgers sold 18,000 ticket packages for this, and the most ever for a Pride night.
Well, he was fired by the Dodgers, or traded by the Dodgers to Oakland, also at the behest of Tommy Lasorda, then the manager, who had a gay son who he rejected and denied for years. So Glenn Burke, who's credited with inventing the high five, by the way, really was treated horribly during his lifetime and deserved a lot better. Also, congratulations to Janelle Monáe and JoJo Siwa, who were the grand marshals of the first West Hollywood Pride Parade.
And by the way, with staying with baseball, five Tampa Bay Rays refused to wear their pride logos because Jesus objects to that.
And then they lost the game with those non-pride wearing.
To the White Sox, 3-2. Last year, by the way, 25 corporations pretending to honor pride donated more than $10 million to anti-LGBTQ politicians. These corporations are not our friends.
The sit-in continues at Seattle Pacific University, 2 weeks and counting. This is the Christian university that refuses to hire any LGBTQ people. The students are staging a sit-in. In Florida, the cops have arrested a 17-year-old boy who was threatening to shoot up West Palm Beach Pride. He was making threats online. They found him in Canada, and they say he has no remorse for making these threats. And in Georgia, a federal judge has ruled per the Bostock Supreme Court decision that a trans deputy sheriff there must get insurance coverage for trans care. She was being rejected.
San Francisco Mayor London Breed won't march in the Pride Parade over the exclusion of uniformed cops.
Well, people don't like her for rounding up homeless camps either, although she's promising to end trans homelessness in 5 years. Let's move on.
International?
A few minutes. First,
big objections. Big objections to the United Kingdom's plan to send LGBTQ asylum seekers to Rwanda to await their fate.
And a Zimbabwean lesbian was murdered in South Africa. Ruth Nikki Chigowe, 24 years old, stoned to death about a week after another lesbian was brutally murdered.
There were 20 anti-LGBTQ murders in South Africa in 2021. So they've got a constitutional amendment protecting sexual orientation, but they got a lot of problems, as do we.
Segueing to better news, Donegal, Ireland held its first Pride Parade with about 1,000 people.
In a town of 6,700.
Bangkok, Thailand held its first Pride in 16 years. Very colorful, but they still have a lot of laws they got to change there. And in Jerusalem, they held a Pride with more death threats. That's where Shira Bankey was murdered in 2015. The Speaker of the Knesset made his first appearance and other members of the Knesset at that parade.
But in France, Billie Jean King, 78 years old, received France's Legion of Honor for her contributions to women's sports, gender equality, and the rights of LGBTQ people in athletics. At the Élysée Palace, presented by French President Macron, the ceremony at the French Open marked the 50th anniversary of her French Open win.
And in Kuwait, the U.S. Embassy celebrated Pride by flying a rainbow flag and tweeting the pro-LGBTQ statements of President Biden. And the Kuwait government got very angry at that U.S. Embassy.
In health news, keep reading about monkeypox, because in the West, it is largely affecting gay men. Who rub up against each other in various circumstances. Not a sexually transmitted disease per se, but if you're in close contact with people who have it, that's how you can get it. And so please be on the lookout.
As treatment is available and a better vaccine is coming along, and so take it seriously. Also, AIDS activists are very angry at the Biden administration because Jill Biden, on the first day of the Pride Month, unveiled a new stamp in honor of Nancy Reagan at the White House with the heinous Postmaster General Louis DeJoy right there with her. Nancy Reagan was a war criminal against
We had to remind Hillary Clinton of that.
Yeah, well, evidently Jill Biden didn't get the message because she went ahead with the ceremony.
And Pete Buttigieg tested positive for COVID this past week after attending a conference in Michigan. But he says his symptoms are mild.
All right. Entertainment news. And Just Like That is going to have a second season. This is the second Sex and the City follow up. And creator Michael Patrick King says, one of my burning passions about season two is Che Diaz, the non-binary Sarah Ramirez character, who you can expect to see a lot more of in season two. And coming this weekend on Netflix, First Kill, teen lesbian girls, one a vampire and one a vampire killer, fall in love.
What about Esther Newton?
Oh, well, Newfest, the New York City LGBTQ Film Festival, held a sort of small pride fest this weekend, including the first showing of the documentary Esther Newton Made Me Gay. On the left is Esther Newton. On the right is the filmmaker Jean Carlo Musto. This is a picture by our associate producer, Bill Ballman, who was there. It's a terrific film, and Esther Newton is a hero in the lesbian community. And watch for it in film festivals in Provincetown and elsewhere.
Justine Lindsay is the NFL's first openly trans cheerleader for the Carolina Panthers. Top Cats is their name.
Yes, and got hired as a cheerleader and then came out to their family and the Panthers. I am waiting for the countdown for how long Justine is going to last as a cheerleader.
I saw a movie that's coming out on Hulu on June 17th. Emma Thompson in Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. She's 63 years old and she's widowed and she's never had a good sex life. So she hires this guy, Leo Grande, played by Daryl McCormick. Very brave performances, very nicely observed. This has got a 95% rating at Rotten Tomatoes, and I highly recommend it.
Well, also on Hulu, I watched Fire Island. I was not so thrilled with it. I'm sure some people will like it, but I found it kind of flat. It's a reworking of Pride and Prejudice. But I saw a couple of other things that are playing at the Tribeca Film Festival this weekend. Short films. One, The Letterman, an 8-minute documentary about the largest collection of gay letters from one man to another in World War II. And Fraud, which is a 13-minute trans scammer who meets her match. So Fraud and The Letterman, Friday and next Wednesday at Tribeca.
And at the
Sexplanation, Alex Liu confronting his shame, online on iTunes at Google Play. Fabulous, fabulous documentary.
At the Morgan Library in New York, James Joyce's Ulysses at 100. I didn't know that Sylvia Beach, who published the book from Paris, I didn't know that there were four lesbian women who were responsible for the publication of that groundbreaking book.
Yes. But a Sexplanation, look for that online. Really.
Out of time. Tony's on Sunday.
Bye.